This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to what will be probably the shortest episode of Shutters Inc. ever. This is Bruce Williams from Shutters Inc. ShuttersIncPodcast.com. There, returned freshly from the middle of Australia, is Mr. Glyn Lavender from CreativePhotoWorkshops.com.au. How was it?
How short is the shortest ever episode?
That's a good question. It's probably one that you weren't in.
Because we've got to set some sort of record somewhere on that, sure.
Right.
Yeah. Are you saying I talk a lot, which is why there's no way it would be, I could beat the record for the shortest?
Possibly.
Okay. how was it? I was just returned, as you say, a few hours ago from Central Australia, from Uluru, or Ayers Rock, as it's more better known.
Yep.
Yeah, it was all right.
Cool.
It was a quick trip. I was only up there.
Got the one photo?
Well, I took a couple, but there was nothing very inspiring, I've got to tell you. It was cloudless sky, perfect blue cloudless sky.
Right.
So nothing in sunset, nothing in sunrise. And
now I've got to ask the question.
Yeah.
Why is this client intent on taking his own photos? Surely it would be cheaper to just buy a stock photo.
He's doing an exhibition of his photos.
Oh, okay, right.
Kind of hard. We don't want to get into the Lisa Saab scandal.
Right.
Yeah. This is entirely my work. I paid for it myself.
Right. Okay.
So you know, we get up there. We flew up there and got there. It's like 2:30 in the afternoon or something.
Yeah.
And took the bus. Now, from the resort to the car park at Ayers Rock,
yeah,
it's about a 20-minute bus trip.
Yep.
It's $50 return each person.
Whoa.
So we did two trips. That's $200.
Just in bus fares.
just to go in the back again. You know, it's like a crazy expensive place. So we take the bus trip in there and I don't know. I reckon we probably walked for 10, 15 minutes and then he was done.
Right.
We'll never sit down. I think I lied. But I think we went three times. Then we took a bus down. We took a bus down for the sunset.
Oh, you're kidding.
Oh, no, I lied. No, the bus back was stopped to do sunset. So it was still one trip. Right. So we stopped, did sunset where the swing. Bunch of nothing happened.
Right.
And it was only when driving, and here's the stupid thing about these buses too. Sunset was, I don't know, it was 7:30, let's say, 6:30, let's say. Bus leaves at 6:40. If you're not there, you're gone.
Oh, what?
You've got 10 minutes after sunset, yeah, and you've got to be, and it's a good 5 minutes or so walk back. So basically, as the sun's just setting, you've got to be heading back for the bus.
That's silly.
It was the same as the sunrise this morning. The sunrise is 6:30 and the bus departs at 6:40. So the sun's only just starting to creep over the horizon. We lost two people at the sunrise on the bus. Two people didn't make it back. You know, 6 minutes past or 8 minutes past our takeoff time.
Yeah, right.
They still weren't there, so we just left them.
Wow.
The bad thing is the bus only goes to that car park for sunrise. So it's not going back there any time today. So they can't sit there and wait for the next one to come round. It's a once a day. So they're left out. I've got no idea.
Oh, well, back. At least they've got a half a chance of getting a decent sunset photo tonight.
Well, no, because it's on the other side. That's what I'm saying. So it only stops in one spot for sunrise and one spot for sunset. And nay the two shall meet.
Right.
They could possibly walk the distance during the day. So I don't know how they got back or what happened to them from there.
Wow.
If we hear of two lost Japanese tourists in the outback, that's them.
Hashtag tourism fail. Jesus.
They were told, but their English is a best second language possibly.
Yeah, but I see this as a failure on the part of the bus operator, not on the part of the tourists.
Why?
Because they're not catering for the market.
This bus isn't a tour bus. This bus is a public transport.
So you're
not paying your $200 for the privilege of even being told anything.
Right.
It's simply a bus that goes round the road that goes round the rock and comes back to the hotels.
Jeez, talk about a bloody license to print money.
The other ones are expensive. know.
Right. Okay.
But in all fairness, you know, it's $49 for $120. You can get a multi trip for the one day.
Right. Which is probably better value for money.
Oh, not really, because the buses only come like every 2 hours.
Oh, okay.
So they'll hop on, hop off, which is what they are. Well, you can hop off, but it's a long bloody wait before you can hop onto another one. So you can't kind of just hop around all the different car parks around the thing. If they're going every half hour, you can hop off, have a quick look around for half an hour, hop on, go to the next one, and do it fairly quickly.
So did you fly into Alice Springs?
No, fly into Ayers Rock.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Surely it would have been cheaper to fly into Alice Springs and then hire a car.
Do you know it's a 5.5 hour, 6 hour drive?
From Alice?
Yeah.
Is it really?
It's 500 odd kilometres.
Oh, okay. I didn't realise it was that far.
Yeah, it's a long way away. So, yeah, so it's not a quick trip.
Yeah, fair enough.
And if you're only there for 22,
yeah.
You're driving 12 and it's night for 10. It doesn't give you a lot of opportunities.
Fair enough.
So we did sunrise and sun, and I don't know, we took a few photos. Best photo I took was with the panorama with my phone. Right. That wasn't very good. I don't know. He seemed happy. I left him asleep in his bed because he stayed there for a few more days and friends are flying in. He said a few days with his friends. And,
right.
Yeah, I came home. So, yeah. I don't know. Job done. He's happy.
Fair enough. Job.
Yeah. It was nice to pop up to the rock for a day, spend a day out in the sunshine and come home again. It was all right.
Nice. Nice.
Bad way to break up the week after the first week of kids going back to school. So it was, yeah, nice to have a bit of a break away from normal routine to stuff. So it was good.
Lovely.
And I did one other photo thing this week.
Oh, yeah.
And it was my eldest daughter's birthday on Tuesday. She turned 12.
Yep, saw
and
that.
I have to do her photo, a birthday photo. So we took her out and I shot a couple of photos with the 85 1.8 Tamron, which I had a bastard of a time focusing.
Oh.
Well, it was really low light. I mean, by the time I remembered, it was like the sun was pretty close to set.
Right.
You know, and I'm trying to do a natural light portrait down by the creek.
Right.
And I just, she's moving, I'm moving. Yeah, it's just, took a lot of photos and not a lot of work, bloody in focus, you know, and you get these beautiful expressions and yeah, it's just.
Right.
So I blame the lens. Yes. It's obviously absolutely crap. Obviously. And failing the lens, it was the camera's fault.
Yeah, of course.
I think that was my daughter's fault.
Of course.
And after that, it was the light's fault.
Yeah.
And I think the bushes might have been too far away in the background, so it's their fault too. There's plenty of other things to blame but myself. Yeah. But I've got one nice one, which is
excellent.
Nice. So that's I've got an A shot. That's all your ones. That's been my week of photography.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
And yourself?
I haven't had the camera out, but today I went to a trade show at Darling Harbour.
Oh, I heard about this. Let's see what.
I meant to mention it last week and completely forgot about it. It's called the Media and Entertainment Tech Expo. So it was on yesterday, Wednesday, today, Thursday, tomorrow, Friday. So it'll all be over by the time this podcast comes out. But I came across a stand for CASA, the Civil Aviation Safety Authority.
Yeah.
And I recorded a short 8-9 minute interview with a fella from CASA about drones, which is going to feature later on in this episode.
Did you take your recording devices with you?
I did.
Why?
Because I thought you never know who I'm going to run into that I might want to record an interview with, either for this podcast or for the other podcast.
And that's the only thing you'd find?
That was the only thing I did, because the whole of the rest of the show was very video-centric. Very heavily geared towards the video production and video broadcast markets.
Were my friends Bird Dog there at all?
Who?
Bird Dog.
I don't recall seeing the name. What do they do?
Oh, video and stuff.
I didn't see them, so I don't know.
They do. It's something to do with the transfer of footage when people shoot to broadcasters.
It's
broadcast distribution system.
Well, it's
but apparently it's mind-blowingly world-changing.
Right. Well, quite possible that they were there and I just, you know, wasn't on my radar and therefore didn't notice them, but they were probably there.
No, I didn't see any adverts from saying they were going to be there, but it seems like it could have been a good vehicle for them.
Yeah, right.
Cool. Yeah. So speaking of technology, just whilst we... People keep sending me... You might have had a ping on your microwave just then. People have been sending me... This is probably the 15th time I've received this in the last day.
Yeah.
If you boil a funny bone, it becomes a laughing stock. That's humorous.
Well, you and your dad jokes. You brought it on yourself, Mr. Lavender.
when I was up at his rock last night at sunset, one of my customers posted, "Oh, my wife's up there right now. I'll tell her to keep an ear out for dad jokes," and she'll pop up and say hello.
Excellent.
Speaking of technology, since we're going to talk, so the CASA, was it good? Did you learn any information?
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, not that it's applicable to me because I don't own a drone and I'm not planning on buying a drone.
Yeah, well, I own a drone, but I'm not going to listen to the podcast. So
of course you're not.
Can you succinct a few important points?
No.
Okay. I shall stay in the dark.
Yes. Basically, they're introducing some, registration and what was the other term he used? I can't think of it now, but you'll hear it later in the interview. Well, you won't, but the other people will. Yeah. So, and CASA has what they call passive monitoring, I think it was the phrase he used, which is basically they have technology where they will go along to things like Vivid, which was on recently in Sydney, and they can monitor all of the drone activity that is going on at an event like Vivid. So events where they suspect there will be a lot of drone activity and a lot of unregistered drone activity at that, they can actually detect what drones are in the air and they can tell who's flying them.
Sniffer dogs. They're sniffer dogs.
He was very cagey about disclosing their techniques because obviously he can't discuss operational.
When you say that who's flying them, if it's not registered.
Yeah, so.
Do you mean they could say, okay, somewhere in that region over there, that group of people, someone over there is flying one? Wouldn't this know who by name?
That was kind of the takeaway that I got from it. So
they've got satellites in space.
Yes.
With high resolution cameras taking photos.
Yeah.
And then doing face data recognition.
Yeah, but he said they could tell the types of drones that were up. So,
that's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. So anyway, it was an interesting little chat, and I thought just given the state of the market with drones and all that sort of stuff, I thought it was worth spending a few minutes to have a yarn and put it on the podcast. And
it doubles the length of the podcast.
Exactly. So
except for those who have no interest in drones, they'll turn it off at that point.
That's right. Okay. Yes.
I got one other good piece of news this week.
Oh, yeah.
I got an email yesterday.
Right.
From my lovely friends at Narbox.
Oh, yeah.
That the Narbox 2 is finally ready to go.
Ah, cool.
They finally received shipments. It's been... no one knows. You've got an exclusive, by the way. No one knows yet that it's ready to go.
Right.
But it's supposed to be released in April, and they've had just a couple of delays with their SSD manufacturer and their backup SSD manufacturer.
Right.
Because apparently the type of SSD drive they're going to SSD drive is like saying ATM machine, isn't it?
Yes, that's
the
correct.
The SSD drive they're using is brand new technology, the latest state of the art, not released yet technology sort of stuff.
Right.
So they've been under all these non-disclosure agreements to not say anything about why there's delays, which means they can't tell their Kickstarter people delays or when there'd be a time frame of having information. So there's been quite a few feral comments going on.
Right.
Including even today, even though I know now that it's going to be. So I'm going to be one of the first people in the world that's shipping mine on Monday. And I think it's not going to be until August until the rest of the world starts to see them, which means it's going to come in time for my trip to Tanzania, which is bloody marvellous.
Nice.
So I cannot wait to get that a thorough bashing.
Excellent.
And see how it goes. So, so that's awesome. I'm pretty excited about that. And I'm told it has come upon – so I helped them launch it in New York in October last year.
Yeah.
And apparently it's come leaps and bounds since then even as a tool. So,
right.
I cannot wait to see.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, should we cover some stories?
Oh, but may as well. I can get back to watching my shows.
Very briefly. Something I saw on Will Shipton's email that came out today was life as a snapper. Now, we spoke about this photography startup called Snapper, S-N-A-P-P-R. This was started by a couple of Australian guys a few years ago now. I think it was about 2016 they launched it. And basically what they're trying to do is be the Uber of photography, where they're, you know, offering service to people who wouldn't normally go to professional photographers, the opportunity to shoot with a professional photographer, and the professional photographers are working for peanuts. And yeah, this is a blog post about what it's like to be on the working end of that arrangement. And that if photographers are caught handing out their personal contact details to the clients in order to circumvent Snapper, they're up for a $5,000 fee from Snapper. That's US dollars too.
Man.
So, anyway, it's an interesting read for those that are following that story.
Are they finding it a positive or a negative experience working for them other than that?
It seems a little bit of both, but...
Are they actually making any money?
Leaning towards the negative was the general vibe that I got. Well, it's just that, yeah, you're working dirt cheap and, you know, the expectation is that for every 60 seconds you're with a client, you'll be producing at least one workable image.
That shoots my Uluru adventure up the right up the cracker, doesn't it?
That's yeah, exactly.
30, 60 seconds.
So.
I think I taught my guy more how to use his phone than how to use his camera was, right?
Right.
Taught him how to do panoramas, you know.
Right.
I taught him how to use that face app to make your face look old.
Oh, okay, yep. Yep.
A lot of stuff.
Both Adam and Philip Johnson sent me links to the announcement about the Sony A7R4, as if I wasn't going to be across it already.
As if you wouldn't be across it already.
Exactly. And I've got to say, doesn't interest me. It really doesn't. As I said, you know, to you earlier this year when you asked me why did I buy the A7 III and not the A7R III,
yeah.
It's because I'm not interested in the megapixels. You know, for me, 24 megapixels is perfect.
Have you seen the photo comparison between the lesser and the greater?
Well, everything I've seen is sized down to, you know, 1,500 odd pixels on the web. Yeah, so
it's still a hell of a lot sharper. Everything I've seen is a hell of a lot sharper.
I mean, it does look amazing. I mean, and they're quoting 15 exposure stops, which is, you know, pretty awesome.
Of dynamic range.
Yeah, of dynamic range, yeah. So pretty amazing beast if you're prepared to drop the $5,500 Australian dollars to own the body only.
So that's, yeah, so compared to what, you know, Nikon or Canon high end, but that's their price point.
It's in that ballpark, yeah.
Yeah, it's not, I don't think it's expensive because all the other stuff's cheap.
Yeah, and for anyone who hasn't been following the story, it's the first 61 megapixel sensor, 35mm mirrorless to hit the market. So, you know.
And non-mirrorless too.
Yeah, oh, right. Well, okay, yeah.
I think it's because no one else has come out with a 61 megapixel. I mean, really? Needed the extra one?
It is an unusual size, isn't it?
It's just, yeah.
But anyway, I mean, it looks amazing. I saw photos from Mark Gaylor on his Facebook feed today, and, you know, the stuff he's shot with it does look gorgeous. But like I said, it's all scaled down for social media, you know, until you can actually see the whole high-res file, you can't really, you know, get an idea, unless, of course, they do a 100% crop, which I have seen a couple of examples of, and it is pretty stunning.
You saw the crescent, but I saw the whole of the moon.
There you go. Boom, boom.
Water Boys.
Yes. Great track.
Well, I didn't think so at the time, but it grew on me over years.
Oh, really? I loved it from the minute I first heard it.
I thought it was terrible. Claptrap.
Do you know it's written about Prince?
Is it really?
Yeah. And the whole thing is that Mike Scott, the lead singer of the Water Boys who wrote the song, that whole analogy was Prince was just this musical genius, and he's basically saying, you know, my musical expression is like the crescent, and you saw the whole of the moon.
So now I get it. Makes more sense, doesn't it? It's good.
So you never heard that story?
No.
Well, there you go.
Most fascinating.
Learn something every day on a photography podcast.
Yeah, just not ours.
Steve Peters sent us a story from paulreifer.com. And this is another story similar to something that we covered last week. And it's photographers and Instagrammers stopped being so damn selfish and disrespectful. And this is all about the lavender fields in France where, you know, there are these beautiful, long, perfectly straight rows of lavender that grow in these fields every year because these farmers, you know, cultivate these crops. Yeah. And the whole bunch of photographers and Instagrammers just go out there at this time of the year and they disregard the fences and they just climb over and, you know, trample the lavender in the, you know, pursuit of the perfect Instagram selfie. And there's even a photo of the farmers putting a big sign up that they painted on a bed sheet saying, respect our work, please. They hung it from a tree in order to try and ruin the view for some of the photographers. And all the photographers did was just turn the other way and kept shooting. I was like, geez,
it's really? Got the holy canola fields down here in Victoria.
Exactly.
Bombarded with photographers.
I mean, I don't know if I'm the odd one out, but if it was me, I'd be inclined to just drive up to the house and go, hey, mate, I'm a photographer. Would you mind if I did, you know, blah, blah, blah? And, you know,
I don't think it wants you to do blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, really, would it be that hard to go and ask? But anyway, well, apparently.
Maybe the farm might be mild, like a canola field here in Victoria. The farmhouse could be who knows where.
Well, that's a good point.
Yeah, it could be kilometres away. Who knows? But yeah, I know. Respect.
Yeah.
Always.
Anyway, Adam sent us a few stories. The first one was thieves may be selling your photos on Shutterstock.
Excellent.
I haven't had a chance to look at this, but I can gather the gist of the story.
Well, the gist is I'll just surmise it for you.
Yeah. Thieves?
That thieves may, this has not been confirmed yet, but may be selling your photos on Shutterstock.
Whose photos?
Not yours, obviously, or mine. Wish someone would steal my photos. I want the vindication. So do you.
Right.
Please steal our photos.
That's right.
Just our own website, stealourphotos.com.
That's right. The next story was this photographer turned a shipping container into a huge camera with a built-in darkroom. And there's a little 9-minute video attached to this story, and it's well worth watching. This guy's based in Exeter in the UK. He teaches at a local arts college. He teaches photography. And he bought the shipping container, stripped it out, painted the inside of it black, painted the outside of it to look like an Instamatic camera. And he's actually, and I must admit, I was fooled by this because I saw the heading, this photographer turned a shipping container into a huge camera. And I thought...
You thought it was a camera. It was taking photos in the shipping container.
No. But where there's the painted lens on the outside of the shipping container, I thought, oh, he's put a pinhole, you know, type apparatus in the sidewall of the shipping container. That's actually not what he's done. That wall is actually unmolested. There are no holes in it whatsoever. What he's got is on the end of the shipping container, you open up the dual doors... And then he's
got closes this... it really quickly, and that's the shutter.
almost. He's got this movable panel that he swings around into place, and it fills that entire, you know, cross section of the shipping container. And then he's got a little door that he can open in that and step through. And then he's, you know, basically doing a pinhole type thing. Yeah, it's just amazing. It's well worth watching, and he's produced all
the tripod things. The guy'd need.
That's right. Yes. Yeah, so it's a really, really cool little video, and he basically set this thing up for a couple of weeks in a park in Exeter and took all of these photographs of people from the community and at the same time ran little workshops on developing and, you know, explaining the photographic process. And then at the end of the 2.5 weeks was holding an exhibition inside the shipping container all the photographs that he'd shot over the 2 week period. So, yeah, it's a really nice story. So, yeah. Highly recommend people have a little watch of that one.
Nice.
The next one was researchers develop after-the-fact portrait relighting AI that works without 3D depth information. I watched this 5-minute video, Adam, and I want my 5 minutes back.
Adam. So I'm wasting Bruce's time. He's not much of a left, and he can't.
I honestly don't get what the fuss was about. Because I thought that the relighting looked worse than the original lighting of the photographs. But maybe it's just me. Maybe I didn't quite understand.
Good relighting. No, just relighting.
Exactly. Yeah. It.
Did or did not the video show them doing what they said they would do?
Well, I guess it did.
There you go. No lies there.
That's right. The next one is these six women shaped photojournalism during life's heyday, life as in the magazine.
Hang on a sec. These six women shaped what?
No, these women
shaped like what?
Shaped photojournalism.
How did they shape it? Like clay?
Yes. Just like clay, Glenn.
What are you saying, man?
They shaped it like clay at 125th of a second. So anyway.
These women shaped photojournalism.
Apparently. Margaret Burke White. Marie Hansen.
Oh, she's handsome.
Martha Holmes. Lisa Larson. Nina Lean. And Hansel Mieth. None of whom I've heard of. But there you go. So anyway, they were all photographers in the early part of the 20th century. And
Did they help shape or did they shape?
I don't know.
Well, see, it's a big difference when you think about it, isn't it? Because shaping means they're the only ones doing it. They're the ones who made it what it is.
Yes, good point.
Or are they part of the movement?
Yeah, good point.
And if they were the ones to do it, everything, why have they been so poorly and shoddily dealt with since then?
Exactly. Good point.
So I think you should look into that, and let us know next week.
Yes. And the last one was that Adam sent us was one that I had seen on Facebook myself today, and this was Amazon accidentally sold $13,000 camera gear for $100 on Prime Day. Now, allegedly, according to the comments on the story, people have been in touch with Amazon, and Amazon has said that, yes, they will honour the pricing. Now, this includes a $13,000 lens for $94.48.
US.
Yeah. Now, whether that is true or not, I don't know.
Well, there's photos of people showing the stuff that they've ordered arriving.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So The guy who ordered that Canon 800mm lens, $13,000 lens, says, well, he's not going to be surprised if they cancel.
But yeah.
People are buying Sony A7s and stuff
for
$94. Everything was the same price.
Yeah.
$5,000 Sony cameras silly prices.
Yep. So I guess if you were fortunate enough to get in on that, then good luck to you.
Before they realised they shouldn't have let the work experience kid...
set the prices.
Really important sale.
Yeah, exactly. So that is it. So,
that's it.
Mr. Laverty, you can go back to your television or whatever it is that you were doing.
I'm just at the end, finishing the end of a really good book.
Oh, nice.
So let me quickly tell you the premise, because I thought it was quite clever. Which is, this guy comes staggering into a remote Western Australian police station covered in blood and bruised and battered. And claims to have escaped from a guy who kidnapped him.
Right.
And tied him up and said, you're going to be number 55.
I saw this movie. It's called Wolf Creek.
No. You're going to be number 55.
Right.
There you go. Guy goes out. Guy manages to escape. Fights his way. He's been chased by this guy. They have a big fall off the edge of this cliff. He wakes up. The guy's unconscious or dead next to him. He runs away, finds an old bush bike, cycles into the nearest town, stags the police station, tells the story, okay?
Right.
The next day, this guy staggers in. Oh, and that's right. The guy said, this guy called Heath was trying to kill me. The next day, a guy staggers into the police station covered in blood and bruised and battered. Oh. And
tells
says
the same
guy,
story.
Exactly the same story. Oh. And uses the other guy's name. And I'm 700 pages in, and I still have no idea who's done what to who, to why, and when. You know, it's such a clever idea, you know. And there's me in the outback of Australia reading about the serial killers in the outback of Australia. It's like, yes.
Oh, that's awesome.
I'm going to finish my book.
Fantastic. All right, mate. Well, you have a good one, and we'll talk to you next week.
Well, just before you get on that, CASA stands for what?
The Civil Aviation Safety Authority.
There you go. For Australia. So what he
That's
says
correct.
Is relevant yes. to Australians.
Yes.
But probably not too far off what's going to happen anywhere else anyway, I would imagine. If it has
exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So,
All right, mate. Well, we'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
All righty. So as I mentioned previously in the podcast, I've got a little interview that I recorded today at the Media and Entertainment Tech Expo. So here we go. So I'm at the Media and Entertainment Tech Expo in Darling Harbour, and I've come to the Civil Aviation Safety Authority stand, and I'm chatting with Heath McDonald, who is part of CASA, and we're going to have a chat about some of the things that, as potential drone pilots, we should be aware of. So, Heath, welcome to Shutters Inc., mate.
Thanks very much, Bruce. Appreciate you.
So, obviously, this is an exploding market as far as photography goes, and I think we could probably agree there's been a few cowboys in the, you know, out there without licenses, without regard for safety, and obviously, you know, CASA wants to get ahead of that. What can you tell us about what's happening with regards regulation of the market, like as owners of drones, where you can fly, where you can't fly, when, all that sort of stuff?
Part of CASA's key policy and really our driver is to make safe skies for all, and that's why we use that as a slogan. Part of that is with the drones especially, they can pose a significant risk, and look, something as small as a Mavic and things like that, and we can see with Gatwick what happened over there, there is a potential to put people's lives in harm's way.
Just recount that story for us, for those that aren't up on it.
So the Gatwick incident, as far as I'm aware from the media reports, there was suspected drone activity around that airport, which forced a closure of the airport. Now, that's just an example that I've used from media, obviously, that we've seen in the press and things like that. So look, coming back home, one of the key, or the next step that we're taking, is the drone registration and accreditation. So the drone registration scheme will be for all commercial drones, and also for recreational drones above 250 grams.
So I was going to ask, what's the differentiation between a recreational drone and a commercial drone? Is that just that weight thing?
The difference between the commercial and recreational is if the operator is getting paid pretty much to do it. So it's the commercial gain. If you're receiving a reward for what your business you're providing, then that would be classified as commercial. Recreational is if, you know, budding photographers want to go out and get great shots of, you know, sunset, sunrise, things like that.
Yeah.
So with the registration scheme, that will commence around September, October this year. Right. And it'll be a stepped approach. So the commercial operators will be required to register first, and then followed by recreational users.
And is it all recreational users, or only those above 250 grams?
So any recreational drone above 250 grams. So if you use a drone below 250 grams, you're not required to register. Now, if you look at a drone below 250 grams, it's less likely. Look, the risk appetite for us is quite high there due to the fact that it's so light. And, you know, generally they're just the, you know, toy drones, Kmart, things like that. And look, possibly other manufacturers that are currently, you know, market share may develop them as well. Yeah. Part of the registration, flyers under 16 years of age will need to be supervised by someone 18 or older and who is accredited as well.
Right.
So look, the registration scheme is one part of it. That was a requirement from the Senate, and now we're looking also at the accreditation side, which is really the knowledge and really where we like to focus a lot of attention to that. yes, there is that registration, but we also want you to know the rules. And if you do know the rules and you're confident in the rules, then most likely you'll have more fun flying the actual drones themselves.
Now, in terms of the registration, is that going to be done at point of sale, or is it up to the user to apply for that in separately?
So the registration will be mandatory in legislation. However, it's not a point of sale exercise for that.
Okay, so that leads me to what happens in the event of the second-hand market. Because you get people who, you know, they'll go out and they'll spend $1,000 on a DJI or whatever, and they'll play with it for 12 months and they'll go, yeah, this isn't for me. They then throw that up on eBay. What's the requirement, or, you know, who's policing that the new buyer of that product is registered and accredited?
So the system itself that most likely will be used for it will have the ability to register, for instance, the second-hand drones. And that's the reason the point of sale as well, you could treat that like a second-hand drone, that it's just the serial number. It's not necessarily the, you know, like a SIM card, like you hand over your ID, things like that. So the system itself is built to tackle that issue. Yeah.
So I'm wondering, are we going to see a point in time where, if you're going to sell a drone, you need to sign over the registration papers like you do with a motor vehicle?
Oh, I can't comment on that, yeah.
And what sort of fees are going to be involved in this?
For commercial registration, the fee is likely to be from $100 to $160 per drone, and the registration fee for recreational flyers is likely to be around $20 per drone.
And is that a yearly fee?
It will be a yearly fee, yeah.
Yeah, cool. And you guys have got some sort of an online quiz on your website, is that right?
Yeah, so part of the accreditation will be an online education course, and it's really just to make sure that the operator knows the rules. Basically, watching a video and answering a quiz with multiple choice answers, most likely.
Yeah, nice. So what's passive surveillance?
So CASA has been running passive drone surveillance for a number of months. We've collected data from locations such as major airports like Sydney and the like, and areas or events where drones are most likely to be flown in violation of the safety regulations. The equipment allows us to see the location of the drone and the operator, and in many cases to identify the drone. CASA is planning to increase our capability in this area.
So when you say it allows you to identify the drone, do you just mean the make and the model, or do you mean that each drone has some sort of unique electronic fingerprint that it emits that... No. So it's not quite that specific.
I can't comment on that. Yeah.
Oh, okay. As in, fair enough. Okay.
So the drone detection system identifies the drone itself and also the location of the operator.
Wow. Cool. So I guess that'll keep the cowboys at bay. Can't say. Okay, so tell me a little bit about the new app that you guys have got.
Yeah, so the original CASA Cannot Fly There app has now been retired, and over the coming weeks or months, support for that will be withdrawn. As a result, we've decided to invest in a digital platform that will allow industry and other developers to create their own software applications using standardised safety information. We're doing this through an RPAS platform, and we've engaged with Wing Aviation to develop this for us. It will allow a broader range of organisations to use this information to deliver apps that meet the needs of their customers and will ultimately pave the way forward for the safe integration of RPAs into Australian airspace. The first app, Open Sky, is now available. If you head to our website and head to the drone safety page, you'll notice our approved apps on that page.
And is that for Android as well as iOS?
Yes, both Android and iOS.
Yeah, sweet. Oh, wow, that's cool. Awesome, Heath. Well, mate, thanks for the chat. Much appreciated.
No, appreciate your time. Thanks for coming to the expo.
All right, that will do it for another week. And until next week, take care.
Shutters Inc. Another audio2.com quality podcast. For questions, comments and feedback, email theboys@shuttersincpodcast.com. Yeah.